The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. I think we should have better audio. I think my voice should sound better. It's been months that my voice has been slowly degrading. Very happy of what I found because, yes, there was a buzzing noise in my system. It was very subtle, but for those of you, for those like me who really like perfect audio, and this has been a trademark of mine, I've always offered perfect audio to the crowd, even when I call on shows. I really insist because I think it's almost 20, 40% worth of your success that is determined by this, whether people can enjoy, whether they have to work hard to hear you. And I ended up finding that I think I messed a line on my X1222 USB, basically the digital acquisition interface at the end of the system. I was always connecting to line number 2, and I think I just used it so much across the years, something blew up in it. I just changed the line to number 4, which is a different line because it doesn't have phantom power, so it's a less complex line, but I don't need phantom power at that level in my system, and I believe we have a clearer sound. I don't hear the background buzz anymore. I think our levels are perfect. So hopefully this is the end of a long building, very subtle issue and that subtle issue, I was trying to solve it so much that I was messing other aspects of my system that shouldn't be messed with. So when someone on the chat was saying, "Jeff, I hear a buzz," I was playing with all the buttons and then I was messing my voice even more. I believe this is good voice. There might be slight improvements because now I need to rework the bass and all. But I think certainly the background noise issue, I think, is gone. Catty Cat confirms it is better sound. Served Coed says, "When did you move the camera to the ceiling?" Well, I always take a camera at an angle because it's just above my monitor. Now I have all of my audio material right in front of me. Then the monitor is floating in the air due to these arms that can hold monitors from the side. Nothing is touching my desk. Everything is held by an arm. Very satisfied with my current system. And Sneed for Life asks, "Is Trump's Gaza plan based or unbased?" This is what we'll figure out today. Very hard to know what this plan is about. Because it doesn't seem like a plan that respects much Gaza sovereignty. We're not talking, so we're more talking like a winning of the war kind of plan where there would be a takeover of Gaza under this plan in some form. But at the same time, there are wordings in the plan that are kind of incompatible, even with what Netanyahu said today on the press conference as they were saying, "We've agreed on this deal." You know, the plan talks about a Palestinian authority. The plan doesn't fit with what Netanyahu had been saying for now for about 2 weeks, where Netanyahu was saying, "We're going to take over Gaza, it's our land." Well, according to that plan, it kind of wouldn't be, but at the same time, the administration of the place would be under some sort of investors stakeholders and perhaps other countries like Egypt. And you're like, what am I being fucked with here? What is the catch? That is my reaction when I read the details of this plan. We'll go through the detail, but what is the catch? Is Israel going to argue that Hamas didn't release the hostages, and do they not intend to move on to any points beyond number 5, number 6, and then they're going to drop it, they're going to tear it apart? Is Hamas going to accept this? Is there even a thing such as Hamas with hostages anymore, given the absolute destruction of Gaza? I mean, does Israel even know how many hostages would be available? Even their bodies would be returned. I don't know, because it's like you bombed so hard. I have no doubt that a massive amount of hostages have been actually killed by Israel's bombing. Like, if you bomb these random residential buildings, you're going to catch some apartment where some of your own hostages were kept in. So it's very hard to believe that this would be the end of war and that this would resolve all. But it kind of illustrates the position of Trump and a very pro-Israel positioning. So it's a very aggressive offer. And at the same time, Netanyahu is trying to make it more aggressive. And there was some conflict today in the press conference. There was some tension where Netanyahu said, there will be no Palestinian Authority unless they stop teaching their kids this, unless this. So he was adding so many conditions that basically he was saying there will be no Palestinian Authority. Where Trump came back and said, I heard Netanyahu say that he doesn't want Palestinian Authority, but it will have to be. So very interesting. Already, as we say, oh, we agree on this deal, it doesn't seem that the two sides, at least the U.S. and Israel, even agree on what the deal says. It is very confusing. Someone is thinking about fucking up that deal in advance. Someone is bullshitting us here. We'll go through it. But today I woke up and I was talking about artificial intelligence. And please understand something about those people who complain about artificial intelligence. Your intelligence is artificial too. It too is just math. There is nothing magical happening in your brain. Your brain is an algorithm. Your brain does math. Your brain uses electricity to do math. It's a different kind of electricity. It's biochemical rather than purely electronic. But in the end, it implements an algorithm, what's happening in your brain. The differences between your brain and AI are not to be found fundamentally at this level. Fundamentally, they're the same thing. They are an algorithm that tries to achieve something. Now, your brain has been farmed for lots of time, intergenerationally, to be making babies. And that's the training set on which it's been trained forever. How do you make babies? How do you survive? How do you feed your babies? And that led to a brain to an algorithm that accomplishes certain things. It's quite impressive, actually, how multipurpose we became given the simplicity of our training set. Evolution only wants you to make babies. The algorithm can become arbitrarily complex because of the peacock tail phenomenon, where in an attempt to please to the female, the male does crazy stuff. And the peacock tail is one example, and the human brain is another. We had to evolve general purpose cognition just to be able to catch all those curveballs that were being thrown by the other sex. Nicholas Petris says, probably not on YouTube, Numale, but JF will have the verdict. Numale was asking, can I talk about legalizing rape? What the fuck are you talking about? Are you bringing back the Rouge V memes? I mean, it is not so much. Actually, Rushdie said it provocatively, let us legalize rape. And then it got caught by mainstream critiques that wanted to paint him in a bad light. But the reality of the point he was making is, wouldn't it be more efficient as a society if there was pre-consent write-offs? And I think it was much more rational than what the mainstream wanted to say. The mainstream wanted to paint this as some sort of misogynistic position. But what Rushdie was really saying is, what if we were to consider that when you do join a hotel room with a man, it is for sex, and you have consented to sex implicitly by accepting to enter that room? What if we were to say a husband and a woman on private property that is owned by the couple are entitled to each other's sex and therefore are not capable of raping each other? Those are philosophical, valid reflections to be had, because people will tell you, oh, well, what about if she changes her mind? As if that was the gravest thing that we have to mess the whole of society because some woman might change her mind within the space of 2 minutes. Let's look at the other side of the middle. What happens in a society where we don't legalize those situations? Well, what happens is an infinity of conflict. Divorce talk, threats to fake rape, threats to make fake allegations about rape and abuse. You open up a Pandora's box where you have here to balance two arms. And I believe that our society, in going toward extreme feminism, has decided to obsess about the possibility that a woman may change her mind within the space of 2 minutes. But it hasn't looked at the arm that it was creating in the process. It hasn't looked at, hey, do you realize that you have an infinite limit that you've opened here as you approach rape? You know, the limit of rape, the mathematical limit, where a woman can say, oh, well, I changed my mind between the moment I said, I want to have sex with you, and the moment his penis came into me. Oh, I changed my mind at the very moment where, after I kissed him, like this is Lauren Southern. She kissed Andrew Tate, but then she wants to make it a rape because she kissed Andrew Tate, went to his hotel room, had kind of affectionate touching and kissing responses, and we are to believe that it's a rape after the kissing that happens. And Rushdie's solution is not dramatic at all. What's dramatic is that we're not solving this problem. We're not solving the problem that infinite... To be conceiving of an infinity of time slices in a woman's mind in between the penetration and whatever she's done before opens up impossible situations for men. Impossible. And you know, post-regret claims of rape. Oh, well, I was kind of into it when we were doing it, but then I realized he's evil because he's right-wing. You open up a whole Pandora box of little demons. So, yes, we can talk about these subjects on YouTube. I will not censor myself for YouTube. I'll tell you what right away. We are multi-streaming tonight. I am not kneeling to YouTube.
The fact that not all of us are chads today is proof that rape was the norm throughout human history.
You are suggesting by this chat that because some betas still exist, the betas would be the rapist of the past. I disagree with this. I disagree with this evolutionary statement. The fact that that not everyone is a Chad could be reflective of something else that has nothing to do with rape. It could be, for example, the fact that it's a risky game biologically to try to produce a genetic Chad. Or it could be a reasoning around evolutionary equilibria. You could say that Chads, if there are too many of them, they start fighting with each other. And so there's no place for more than 5% Chad. There's no place for more than 20% Chad. But as soon as you have a higher proportion of them, they start to evolutionarily punish themselves through inter-Chad conflict. So no, I wouldn't say that because not every man is a Chad today, this means there was rape throughout our history. A much stronger line of evidence to say that rape was very common in our history is female rape fantasies. That definitely tells me that the female is a deluded agent whose ancestry were probably a lot of rapists, and therefore, as she thinks of sex, she sees the things that were sculpted in her mind through the natural selection process, which includes rape fantasies. All right, before we get into the Gaza plan, let us check out there was an argument against my statement on intelligence. A lot of people are still convinced that intelligence is different. The human intelligence has something special. Doubting Thomas sends a super chat. Thank you very much for the support. He says, given your record, if you're serious about monogamy, instead of solicitation to woman on X, maybe directly to the fathers of the woman, be it Mr. Smith of Trad West or Mr. Xi / Babu of Philippines, India. Well, my situation is not easily solvable like this. I cannot impose on a normie woman to be with her. And so you have to understand this. Women are incapable of standing by a man. They are incapable of standing by strength. They are particularly incapable of standing by someone like me who's not just strong and alpha in his public presence, but I am bizarre in the process. Like, I am an awkward guy with an awkward, bizarre contribution to the public space. I like what I do, and I stand by all my life. But 99.999% of the women cannot. They are guided by normality. They are guided by the search for normocentricity. And I am the exact opposite of this. I am a canary in the coal mine of weirdness, intellectualism, depth, and ultimately a test for society. Is this society truly opened? In that circumstance, I cannot just pick up a random woman on the street or go to a local farmer and say, hello, sir, I would like to inseminate your 18-year-old beautiful blonde farmer. I just can't, because I would be taking them in a world that they cannot consent to. They don't understand it. They don't understand what it is to be a public figure, let alone a provocative, awkward, autistic, weird author. It would be evil to take a woman if I was fucking... what are these big YouTubers? If I was Jake Paul, okay? It would be unjust if I was Jake Paul to pick up a random woman who doesn't know anything about the internet. It would be even more unjust for JF to do that, because not many people understand what my creation is. Not many people, even internet-aware people, they don't understand what I've done and why it's important. So I need a very, very weirdo woman to stand by my side. For that reason, I have limited, you know, like Mama JF, she, you know, she was such a fan of me to begin with. She thought I would change the world, and she went to write it everywhere she could, you know, on walls with spray paint. This is the kind of personality that's needed because the normie mind cannot comprehend. The normie mind cannot comprehend, and especially not the female mind. The female mind searches for normalness and to not offend the system. My entire life meaning is about offending the system. My entire life meaning is a test on society. If you're not standing by my side with that mentality that this test must be had and that my path is righteous, I can't be with a random Indian woman who has no idea what the white internet is about. She would be completely clueless, and anything that she gets as a signal from society would be telling her that she has made the wrong choice. She wouldn't be able to appreciate me for my value. I need someone who can appreciate me for my value. Aim says, having a woman who adores you is amazing. Yeah, exactly. And it's so simple, you know. It's very simple, but it's not that simple when you know the woman brain. And it's not that simple when you are an autistic artist like me. Canard says, only a strong, beautiful woman like Melania Trump would stay with JF. Even Melania. I don't think I can keep Melania around. I don't think I can. So yes, there's these objections about intelligence. My intelligence is so special. Human intelligence is so special. It is so biological. It is so symbolic. So Ari Dari says, there are different kinds of math. A computer cannot even represent 1 divided by 3 or 2 exponent 1 half. Now, he's right in terms of holding it in memory, but he's not right in terms of representation. And what this sentence doesn't tell you is that 1 divided by 3 is not representable anywhere in the finite universe. 1 divided by 3 is not representable in the way that people would want computers to hold it in their memory. You can't hold it in your memory. Why? Because 1 divided by 3 is 0.333333333 for infinity. And so no matter how many trees you can think of, you're never going to get to infinity by definition. So this weakness, no finite being can, because these numbers you listed are infinite algorithms. Implied in the 1 divided by 3 is a series of infinite steps that never stop. When you say 1 divided by 3, you're saying, all right, try to split it. You're going to have some kind of a remainder to be divided by 3 later. You're going to have some principal value that you start with. That's one step. It gets you to a certain number of decimals. But then you have to continue. You have a remainder that also needs to be divided by 3. And if you do it on base 10, what it means is you're doing 1 divided by 3. You're taking the first decimal, and then you're going to need 0.1 divided by 3 and 0.01 divided by 3. You're never going to get to a representation of the true 1 divided by 3. So what you have here is really an algorithm. It's a recipe for a theoretical number that you will never reach. And he says, yet we are able to have very clear concept of what 1/3 means. A human can look at a circle with 3 lines representing a cake cut in 3 and understand. A computer cannot. As a result of this, a computer will sometimes tell you things like 3 times 1/3 equals 1.0002 or whatever. And I said, the AI has no problem doing that. Hey, Grok, can you prove to our friend here that you are capable of manipulating conversions between symbolisms that imply infinities? First, represent 4/7 as a fraction, then as an alternating series with infinite steps, then add pi to it as a single equation, and then represent pi as a continued fraction. Provide finite calculations valid up to some chosen decimal depth and express in English terms how it would feel to extend these infinite series to infinity. And he says, sure, happy to demonstrate. 4/7. And as an alternating series that keeps going on forever, the sum over k equals 0 to infinity of an alternating sum of -1 exponent k times 3/4 exponent k. Isn't that interesting? An alternating sum that goes on forever, but if you were that approaches 4/7 at the limit. He adds pi to it. He then represents pi as a continued fraction, finite approximations, and then he comments, and extending infinitely. It would be like endlessly refining an approximation, each term nudging closer to the true value without ever stopping, converging in the mathematical limit. AI is perfectly capable of understanding infinities, understanding that the number they put on the screen is not the final one, but they can understand that they would get to it with a certain number of steps. So every single time I engage in these conversations, the features that people claim are unique to human intelligence simply are not. They are invalid, and AI will be shown to be able to reproduce it. I have constant conversations with Grok about infinities, limits, and reaching converging values and asymptomatics. Artemis says, hi, JF. I long believed expressing my sensitivity and vulnerability would attract love, but I've just realized it often triggered contempt and rejection from my mother, my ex-wife, and even my kids. Absolutely. There is no negotiation with emotional extortion, Artemis. And if you want the most important thing when interacting with females, they may choose to betray you, okay? They may choose to play dirty on you. But you never kneel to emotional demands. You never kneel to showing vulnerability because they will dismiss you. You won't exist for them anymore. So, yeah, it's normal maybe to cry in a highly emotional moment, but get it together quick and impose principled-based morality in your interactions with women. I'm not telling you that this is going to keep the woman around and that they're not going to betray you. Women are broken inside. But at least you're going to give yourself a chance. You're going to give yourself a chance if you adopt a pillar, indestructible, solid perception of how to interact with women. Jomo says, we don't negotiate with gross tosh. Yes. I understand what you're saying. You know, you're going to be abandoned. You're going to show... They're going to tell you, I want you to show vulnerability. And the only reason they want to do that is to then use it against you or to mock you in the process or to give themselves an excuse to disconnect from you. So there is no negotiation on this point. You do not show them what they want. You do not show them what they demand. You show them love and care in a principled way when they are good to you. And that's it. And if they break limits or rules, you have to strengthen. You have to strengthen as a response. That is the only way. Now, if you strengthen as a response, many of them will use your strengthening against you and will say, well, if you're going to be like this, then fuck this shit. They can go away and fuck themselves. But the strengthening is the only position in which you can maintain some sort of order. And it's too bad. It's too bad that you even need to impose some order. When I was a young male libertarian, it didn't cross my mind that I would have one day to impose order and rules in family. Because I was like, whatever, you know, everyone is good. She's going to be good. I'm going to be good. It's not how it works. They are an algorithm. Women are an algorithm of searching problems, searching various paranoias, trying to mess up systems. They are forces of destruction, and they absolutely need the male environment to even be functional. Now, it's not like you're going to see a woman who go on their own way and who become SJW type lesbians and stuff. But they are completely lost. They will accomplish nothing and they will destroy society in the process, literally. Just go into any place of America that's been populated by strong proportions of such leftist women. It's unviable. They are breaking the entirety of society, and they're paying themselves in the process through state employment and all sorts of crap. Kate says, what's that shit on the table, JF? Well, it's Minecraft blocks. I have to put them back together, but I didn't get a chance yet. Sneed for Life says, are there based women who respect and cherish men? I like to think that maybe there is. I like to think. But mostly it is forced. So it's like it's never going to be genuine. You can basically force a woman to display acceptance of the male cognition, and you can force her until she reaches her grave. She can fake it long enough. She can fake it long enough that it doesn't matter what she thinks internally, but deeply inside, every woman has a very evil storm brewing of hatred for men, and it is evolutionary. There's nothing you can do about it. You can just put makeup on it for long enough that you can have a good life. Canard Corncoin says, to be vulnerable with women is like sitting in a seat in a bus in front of a chocolate gentleman. What? I'm going to ban you for this statement here. I don't want people to be using hidden words to get me to read stuff that I disagree with. So you're gone from the YouTube chat. If you want to say these things, go on the Rumble chat. Artemis says, can we say that women and children are similar? I feel that most of the time, women are like children, pretending to be adults. I have not seen the viciousness of women and children. So I think that this comparison, I've heard it a lot, that women are basically morally undeveloped children. I don't buy it. I have not seen the evil of women and children. So somehow it must develop somewhere later. I would bet that the evil must develop in the teenage years in preparation for adulthood. But, you know, children will do little lies and they will feel bad about it. Both children, female children and male children, There is a naivete, there is a capacity for guilt in the children, there is a capacity for immediate correction in the children that I don't see in women. So, I don't join you on this statement. Let us have a look and analyze at the Gaza plan of Donald Trump. But one last question. Sneed for Life was saying, I stopped being attracted to women once they age over 29. What can I do? I mean, it's not a bad age to stop being attracted to women. There are very beautiful women who make it into those age range and are still very attractive. But you're right. In general, you should not be attracted very much above 30 years old. It's all a matter of trade-offs. You can aim for younger. You're going to get weirdos. You're going to get perhaps women with more mental troubles. Or you can aim, or you can walk over your pride and your sexual instinct and try to get at least a few babies in with a 30-plus-year-old. Those are all trade-offs, but you're not wrong because you're not attracted over 29. It's every male is like this. There's nothing wrong and nothing bizarre about this. The Giga Doomer says, it's hard to not be apathetic about it all. Yes, I don't think you should be apathetic, but you should know that evolution has its ways of correcting everything. And down the line, a lot of the toxic female behaviors have been unleashed onto our generations because we are the first generation that has attempted this social experiment of the destruction of marriage and of the of everything that we've done to women, you know, giving them the right to vote, giving them the right to property. I wouldn't be too apathetic other than you should be apathetic about the fact that you live in the worst hellhole of intersex relationship that has ever existed in human civilization. Literally. That is your bad luck. The good luck, and it's a small... it's not a superb white pill, but it's still a white pill. The white pill is that it will get better. It will get better. The world will fix itself. And if it doesn't fix itself via white people, you know, walking back some of the changes that they've made to their civilization, it will be brown people instead. And they will come with their traditions and their culture, which will happen to have found a way to submit women to the will of men. There's not a civilization that covers the planet that hasn't found some handling of the woman question. White people are the only ones who felt so confident about the greatness of their civilization, and they had reasons to be, that they self-abolished it. Sometimes under bad influences, but you have to acknowledge that society has given up on female control and on legislating female bad behavior. And it's kind of our decision, even if it was influenced by bad forces. Reclaim Man says, I've never had a girlfriend who cooked for me, except maybe once or twice. It's really not that difficult. Yeah, one of the great disappointments. It's like people keep talking about how females' roles in the home traditionally was to cook. But I've not seen massive amounts of female talent at cooking, let me tell you. I've not seen anything proving this fact. Aim says, if you have a loving long-term relationship, I think the attraction goes beyond their physical appearance as they age. Well, if you have a working relationship with kids, of course. Of course, it doesn't matter that she becomes less physically attractive. If she has given you kids, that doesn't matter. You can always remember her as at her most beautiful. So I don't think that's a big problem. I've never heard of a male who is satisfied with what he's had in life and yet is frustrated because his female became ugly as a result of it. Thiago says, Jeff, if you had power to engineer a culture for white people, what would you do? Well, I would like a culture of hunters in the far north, perhaps hunting seals in tribes, perhaps alongside a form of coexistence with Native American tribes. The fact is, I'm going to be very honest with you. I don't think that the greatness of white people can survive. I don't think that I don't think that it was ever a great idea to have massive technological developments and cities. Because I think as soon as you get this, you're already stepping into the end of it. As soon as you get this, you get the social parasitism, you get the leftism, you get the female revolution, you get the attack on family. And so to me, we didn't take the wrong route in the 1960s with fucking hippies. We took the wrong route at the onset of the Industrial Revolution, despite the fact that the Industrial Revolution showed our greatness. It showed our greatness, and it showed our productivity. But it was already a step in the wrong direction in transforming the male into a working unit, which down the line also means the female is a convertible working unit, in creating the employment market, employment dependence, and in moving away from the farming lifestyle. So I don't believe that there's a superb future for white people in the way people think. I don't believe that white societies are fundamentally those big societies with big cities and going for the moon and for Mars. And I think those are already distant from how I feel about the European identity. And I believe that greatness of the European people was probably more under a feudal farming system than it is under anything post-industrial revolution. So if that's why I'm fine with running away. I'm fine with a pacific existence in a undesirable place of the earth, because I think it's the only place where this can survive, because this world is headed toward absolute trash dumpster type of infinite reproduction. They will, in a way, when you look at Quebec, when I look at my childhood, there was space in Quebec. You were driving around, you were seeing fields, forests, unoccupied areas. And now what I see in Quebec is just overpopulation. There's a condominium everywhere. It's like Quebec is in a loop of let's create more people into more cubicles, and they've taken that loop so deep that it's now just columns of condominiums with 30 little apartments, each owned by an individual owner within an ownership association where they pay fees. So now you own your cubicle, but you own it in a place where you have to pay monthly fees. That's called a rent, as far as I'm concerned. But the rent isn't paid to a landowner. The rent is paid to the community. And so, I mean, we are creating basically overpopulated parasitic conditions for society. and I don't see this turning very well. I want to live away from this. All right, let's have a look at the Gaza plan of President Donald Trump, and let's try to read through the lines here, read between the lines, and understand that I think if Netanyahu has already accepted this plan, and it looks to me like at first view it would look to me like a plan that Netanyahu doesn't want to accept. In fact, I tweeted this: will Netanyahu accept this? And it seems that he wants to accept it based on the press conference, and that he has already accepted it, and that it's up to Hamas, which makes me come back to my view, which is there are hidden things in there. There are turns of language that basically deprive Gaza of ever reaching any sort of sovereignty. But then, that doesn't mean it's something that Hamas will or should reject, because I don't know what's the situation with Hamas. They have lost a lot of their leaders through war. So whatever is the current leadership may very well be puppets of some kind. They could be people who don't feel invested in a hateful war against Israel. They could be replacements that were kind of placed in position to be soft. So I don't know what they will do with this offer. One, Gaza will be de-radicalized, terror-free zone that does not pose a threat to its neighbors. Okay, that doesn't sound big. That doesn't sound like that this should cause any problem. But how do you ensure a terror-free zone? Well, you need authority, loss of sovereignty, absence of military. So hidden in the terror-free zone, which I guess anyone would say, oh yeah, I'm against terror. But what it means down the line is we're going to basically police your state using an outside force, and therefore you'll never be sovereign. Two, Gaza will be redeveloped for the benefits of the people of Gaza who have suffered more than enough. So that sounds like some sort of hotel, touristic, pamphlet type of speech. What does it mean, the benefit of the people of Gaza? You're going to give them jobs? Three, if both sides agree to this proposal, the war will immediately end. Israeli forces will withdraw to the agreed-upon line to prepare for a hostage release. During this time, all military operations, including aerial and artillery bombardment, will be suspended, and battle lines will remain frozen until conditions are met for the complete staged withdrawal. Four, within 72 hours of Israel publicly accepting this agreement, all hostages, alive and deceased, will be returned. Again, this is very hard to know. Will there be any outcome to this? Because I don't know that Hamas has massive amounts of hostages that they still have track of, that are still alive, or even the bodies, that whether they can recover them or not. I don't know that this is a big thing. Like, what if Hamas comes and says after 72 hours, okay, here's two bodies. Those are the two hostages we had left. Not clear to me that they were able to keep track of the hostages and their bodies while being bombarded and losing so many people to aerial bombardment. Five, once all hostages are released, Israel will release 250 life sentence prisoners plus 1,700 Gazans who were detained after October 7th. Including all women and children detained in that context. For every Israeli hostage whose remains are released, Israel will release the remains of 15 deceased Gazans. So I think that Israel has captured so many Gazans that those numbers are quite small. 250 life sentence prisoners. Well, how many do you have? Do you have 100,000 of them? I've seen constant, again and again in videos, I've seen Gazans being captured and kidnapped. Children, women, men, pretty much anyone they could take. So is it really meaningful? And I'm sure they were getting life sentences for terrorism or whatever. So are these numbers significant? I don't know. And I don't know if this is like a small sacrifice to do for Netanyahu. 6. Once all hostages are returned, Hamas members who commit to peaceful coexistence and to decommission their weapons will be given amnesty. Members of Hamas who wish to leave Gaza will be provided safe passage to receiving countries. So here you have the problem with this deal, which is it asks for a preemptive disarmament, basically, in Gaza. Which means once this step has been accomplished, then what? Then Gazans and Hamas will have no leverage. So from the perspective of Hamas, what they will probably have to think about is, well, what if they fuck us up after point 7? What if they stop honoring anything below the moment we've given up our arms? Now, I don't know if they have that kind of leverage as an organization, because I don't know if they have much military power left anymore. Perhaps they are at the point of surrender where this won't be a problem. But perhaps they're not, and perhaps they feel confident they can still somehow combat the IDF. And so this will be determined. To what extent are the Gazan sides already surrendered? To what extent could we say that they've already lost? This will determine what they do with this condition. 8, entry of distribution and aid in the Gaza Strip will proceed without interference from the two parties through the United Nations and its agencies and the Red Crescent, in addition to other international institutions not associated in any manner with either party. Opening the Rafah crossing in both directions will be subject to the same mechanism implemented under the January 19th, 2025 agreement. Okay, so there will be help. We have seen for 2 years now that the Israeli side is willing to use deprivation of aid, famine, caused intentional famines to weaken the Gazan side. So that's how they've been waging war. Under this deal, there would be some aid coming back. Jomo says, I don't know if their mindset includes surrender, though they seem pretty dug in, like religiously committed. It's easy to adopt an external view that they are all fanatics, but I don't know that that's the case. I think if they have some basis to stand on militarily, if they think they can defend some area, they will try it. But if they're convinced that they can't, then there will be some degree, there will be more temptation to surrender. 9, Gaza will be governed under the temporary transitional governance. So that's where something is getting slipped here. A temporary transitional governance of a technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee responsible for delivering the day-to-day running of public services and municipalities for the people in Gaza. This committee will be made up of qualified Palestinians and international experts, with oversight and supervision by a new international transitional body. So, I mean, how can this turn? Like, it's not going to be local people. It's going to be people handpicked in the polite spheres of international geopolitics. Like, I'm sure they're going to be racially Palestinian. I'm sure they're going to be to project this idea that they are making the decision for the people of Palestine. But something tells me this committee will be out of control from the perspective of Palestinian interests, and that it will include too many Jewish influences of sorts. It will include academics. It will include a bunch of people who down the line will be too aligned to Israeli interests, to the taste of Hamas. That I'm worried about, because, you know, when that's always the problem when they do these committees, is that committees have never solved anything. When they did the Facebook committee for censorship, oh, wow, we're going to have the right to appeal our censorship to a committee. Well, eventually the committee becomes populated by certain people with certain blind spots and certain views. And it always has a limit. It always has a limit one way or the other. It either fails through preaching too much for one side or preaching too much for the other. That's the problem with politics. There's no such thing as an apolitical committee. People who say, oh, politics, not everything is about politics. Well, you may not understand politics if you say something like this, because everything is a war. Everything is a right. Everything can be violated or honored by some committee, depending on who's on that committee. This body will set the framework and handle the funding for the redevelopment of Gaza. But again, now you're talking about, okay, so this temporary committee will be basically an investment center for corporations and billionaires to pour money into Gaza and take control of various aspects of the birthing Gaza economy. That looks like it's going to be just a rich people trying to basically turn Gaza into some sort of vacation resort. That doesn't sound like it's what the Gaza people want, although under certain circumstances, if they were pacified temporarily and you were to set up this setting in which they can make money out of tourism, but this will kind of enslave the Gazans. It will enslave the Gazans to a set of committees and apolitical interests, which are ultimately rich people trying to get a piece of that pie, get a piece of that market in a special circumstance. Comrade Gorbachev says, have you given up on your Odyssey channel, JF? Odyssey, the thing is, they failed at Super Chats, and so I moved to Rumble. So at this point, I'm on Rumble, and I have Streamlabs. Streamlabs are my favorite way to receive Super Chats. So if you'd like to follow the Streamlabs link in the description below to help the show. But no, I chose to get away from Odyssey because their Super Chat system had not been fixed and they were dropped under the bus by Stripe. 10. A Trump economic development plan to rebuild and energize Gaza will be created by convening a panel of experts who have helped birth some of the thriving modern miracle cities in the Middle East. So again, Trump has this real estate vision of Gaza, where you're going to have these princes and these billionaires from oil and from monarchies of the Middle East, and they're going to come in and pour money into investments. Maybe it will work. Maybe that's what's needed for some kind of peace. But it will be, for the Gazans, it will be truly outside forces trying to claim them as tokens in an economic bet. Neymar fan says, Jeff, have you seen Peacemaker? There's a storyline with an ethnostate. In the latest episode, the white people chased minorities out of neighborhood. No, I haven't seen that. Not super interested. Eric Stone says, is there any talk of profit sharing of the gas and oil deposits of the Gaza coast? I haven't seen that at all in the peace deal, no. So 13, Hamas, 12, no one will be forced to leave Gaza, and those who wish to leave will be free to do so and free to return. We will encourage people to stay and offer them the opportunity to build a better Gaza. That kind of sucks after you've seen your entire already existing society bombed by your neighboring country. It's like, oh yeah, now we encourage you to rebuild Gaza. Well, you know, one way in which you could accomplish this efficiently is not to bomb the buildings we already had. That would have been a good starting point. 13, Hamas and other factions agree to not have any role in the governance of Gaza, directly, indirectly, or in any form. All military, terror, and offensive infrastructure, including tunnels and weapon production facilities, will be destroyed and not rebuilt. There will be a process of demilitarization of Gaza under the supervision of independent monitors, which will include placing weapons permanently beyond use through an agreed process of decommissioning, and supported by an internationally funded buyback and reintegration program, all verified by the independent monitors. New Gaza will be fully committed to building a prosperous economy and to peaceful coexistence with their neighbors. So Hamas members not having any role, I don't know. Are Hamas people capable of kind of rebirthing into their own society and perhaps not presenting themselves as Hamas? You know, can they operate basically a dark market of control inside a birthing nonviolent society? I don't know. Can they form gangs, secret gangs? Can they change name? Also, the question is, this point essentially talks about the demilitarization, complete absence of weapons on the land, basically. Gaza would be a weapons-free zone if this is accomplished. 14, a guarantee will be provided by regional partners to ensure that Hamas and the factions comply with their obligations and that New Gaza poses no threat to its neighbors or its people. 15, the United States will work with Arab and international partners to develop a temporary international stabilization force. So here you're going to get Jordan and Egypt, Muslim nations, but that have been very, very regularizing and normalizing of their relationship with Israel. They call it normalizing. It's really them becoming kind of pro-Israel and engaging in some degree of markets with Israel. So now these countries, Jordan and Egypt, would be sending in soldiers that would basically be in charge of enforcing this Israeli-desired supervision and monitoring and control over Gaza so that it doesn't have to be IDF people. Plapides says, missed your live show today. My question to you, JF, is what is your opinion of NLP, hypnotherapy, as a strategy for improving mental health or performance, compared to approved psychotherapy, etc.? Hypnotherapy, I don't know. I don't have a strong position. I tend to think that all of psychology is crap. So this is probably crap mostly too. I tend to believe that everything is crap. In the absence of a strong demonstration, and it's very hard to get strong demonstrations of effectiveness in psychology, let me tell you. Now, if you're happy doing hypnotherapy, if you want to get hypnosed, to hypnotize to figure out some stuff internally. Go ahead and do it. If it makes you feel good, do it. I don't think it will improve your performance or mental health. Most likely. Apu Groiper sends a question about Sturgeon's Law. Sturgeon's Law is an adage stating that 90% of everything is crap. Oh, yeah, that's exactly what I was referring to. But yes, I strongly agree with this. In fact, at 90, they may be generous. It is probably more than this. Thiago says, JF, what do you think of psilocybin mushrooms? I don't think you should consume this. It puts you into a highly psychotic state. Yes, you're going to open your mind to experience things that you wouldn't experience without it. But you should avoid these things because they're not productive ways of engaging with the universe. You'll be all fucked up. Like, people are traumatized by their psychotic experiments under these big drugs. Now, some people argue that the trauma is good, that they are actually fixing something and they get better after it, better forever. That's what the claims are for the medical use of psilocybin mushrooms in depression, that it kind of resets the brain with a different outlook on life. But I wouldn't play with your mind like this. You will just be seeing hallucinations. You will be less connected to reality during that moment. And you don't get much of it other than, you've experienced something. But you've experienced something internally, and it's all false. And it all shows the power of your brain to invent stuff. Not interesting, not productive. Thought Criminal sends a super chat. He says, JF, what do you estimate will be the final death toll of the Palestinians at the end of the war? Gaza has a population of about 2 million, and the current death toll is at least 70,000. Well, I tend to believe, based on the amount of destruction, that a lot of death must not have been counted. And so you tell me that the current official count is 70,000. To what extent are they trying to have an actual count? And to what extent are they counting in stuff that they may not be able to verify? Or, you know, if a big building has fallen, I would expect there were people in that building. I would expect that we can't ever find their body, that it's buried for a long time. So I would say much higher than 70,000. I wouldn't be surprised that at the end of it, 500,000 Palestinians may be dead. One quarter of the population, maybe. I would say in that region. John Thomas says, JF, sorry about the breakup with your girlfriend. It must have been because you rejected. We have a troll here. We have a troll who is trying to get me to say stuff. Let's ban him forever. Plepides says, fair enough. I was just curious if you had any opinion one way or another. NLP is like computer programming for the mind. For your information, hypnotherapy, one session, made a huge difference for me. IQ artist. Well, I'm happy for you. You know, it's like going to the WWE. Like, Jeff, what's your opinion on wrestling, on WWE? If you like it, go there. Are you more happy when you went there and you get out and you're like, yay, The Undertaker has pile-driven Shawn Michaels, yay? okay, it's a delusion, it's false. The Undertaker didn't actually hit Shawn Michaels. But if you enjoy it and if it makes you feel good, sure, but I'm not going to affirm a medical effect of the WWE just because you feel good about it. And it's the same for all these psychology strategies, you know. Maybe it makes some people happy. I tend to think that most people aren't made better by psychology. I tend to think that if you take the whole of all psychological approaches and you just take people as an in and out, did they get better? I don't think so. I think, in fact, a lot of people are broken by psychology. They are made to care so much about their internal state. They are made to look inside themselves so much that it's an unhealthy thing. Number 16, Israel will not occupy or annex Gaza. As the ISF establishes control and stability, the Israel Defense Forces will withdraw based on standards, milestones, and timeframes linked to demilitarization that will be agreed upon between the IDF, the ISF, the guarantors, and the United States, with the objective of a secure Gaza that no longer poses a threat to Israel, Egypt, or its citizens. Practically, the IDF will progressively hand over the Gaza territory it occupies to the ISF. So the ISF is this international stabilization force. So the Jordan and Egypt troops. Okay. In the event Hamas delays or rejects this proposal, the above, including the scaled-up aid operation, will proceed in the terror-free areas handed over from the IDF to the ISF. So that's an opening for the idea that maybe partial, maybe if there's a region where Hamas is too active, they will want to keep control of that region. But maybe in other regions, there will be place for the deal to kind of advance partially. 18, an interfaith dialogue between Muslims and Jews. 19, while Gaza redevelopment advances and when the Palestinian Authority reform program is faithfully carried out. So here you have so new Gaza throughout the text, and then you have at the very end a Palestinian Authority. So you have new Gaza. A place of non-terror, a place controlled by stakeholders and capitalism and investments, people with lots of money, Trump said in the conference. New Gaza. But now New Gaza is under the control of an international stabilization force, which is actually controlled by two allies of Israel, Egypt and Jordan. And now you have suddenly a Palestinian Authority, PA, which it's interesting because in the conference, Netanyahu basically made the Palestinian Authority impossible to reach because he said, not before they stop teaching their children this and not before they disarm. So basically, Netanyahu is saying the Palestinian Authority, no, you're never going to reach it. You're always going to try to reach it, but we'll always have more and more demands. And yet Trump has included the term Palestinian Authority in that deal. So it's a very bizarre situation where I don't believe that there's a strong desire to be headed toward a sovereign Palestinian Authority. And in any case, if we were to even get there, it would be at a point where the Palestinians have been completely disarmed and they're under basically a police state force formed by the United States and the allies of Israel, Egypt, and Jordan. So it's very hard to look at this deal and say, okay, we're headed for peace now. But it's an attempt, and it deserves some credit and I believe that it will be adhered to by Hamas only if they are truly desperate, only if the Hamas people are convinced that they've already lost, they will take this. But ultimately, the sovereign aspect of it, the idea that Palestine will have a true independent existence, is really not there. Because it's international forces and local police. And what happens when you're under the boot of these things? What happens when you've abandoned all of your weapons, where there are allies of Israel doing your local police, where all of your Hamas people are basically second-grade citizens and incapable of joining any of these authorities or these committees? You have a takeover, really, of Gaza by external forces, and mostly external forces that aren't even living in Gaza at this time. So billionaires that will invest in beachfront property, academics that will form the committee, military and police furnished by Jordan and Egypt. So it's a very weird deal that I don't know if this can work. One of my comments on it, I have 4 points. First, it's been a long time since we haven't seen the U.S. even mention Palestinian Authority. I guess that's a good thing, but it's mentioned at the end and doesn't seem serious, and it's such a long-term promise, and down the line you have to abandon so much that one wonders if we're ever going to get there. Second question I had, which is, can Israel really accept this deal? Now, Netanyahu has said he accepted the deal today in the press conference, but to what extent is he good faith about this? To what extent is this deal just a smokescreen for something else that they never care about implementing? Number three, supervision forces, development, experts, stakeholders. Is this really sovereignty? Or is this some touristic development platform for corporate vultures to drain wealth from beachside destinations? Now, even if it was corporate vultures, that doesn't mean it wouldn't be a deal that can effectively lead to peace. Maybe if you have a $1 billion worth hotel on that beachfront property, maybe it gives employment to the local people, and maybe it integrates them to a lifestyle that they accept, and maybe it works. But it's a long shot to think that we're going to fix an existential problem through local opportunities, basically. And that these local opportunities are essentially contradictory with the idea of sovereignty. And number four, this is my question about the whole thing. Is this feasible? Is this feasible? Will this happen as laid out? Or will there be so many obstacles along the way that both sides will at some point argue, well, the others are violating their condition, therefore it doesn't work anymore? Those are my thoughts on the Gaza plan by Trump. AA says, Jeff, what is the deal with Big Spence? He never actually said his previous views were wrong, but said Mike Enoch and the alt-right people are retards and he regrets being near them. Lol. I guess everyone from those years has some degree of evolution, and they look back at this in various ways. I guess I'm the only one who looks back at this time and I wouldn't say, oh, I fundamentally changed or I denied my views. I was clear-minded back then, and I am still clear-minded today. But there's a lot of people who entertain a negative reactions with their own behavior of the time, like Chris Cantwell. I'm following the Telegram of Chris Cantwell. He doesn't want anything to do with the right anymore. He has published on his own Telegram that he has admitted engaging in all sorts of gay sex encounters. And it's like, he's like, I'm so tired of the right and I don't want to talk to these conservative young men anymore. I'm just going to publicize myself as gay. And okay, that's one approach, because he's so tired of people coming to him and talking about the ethnostate or whatever that he's like, fuck off. I'm going to become something you hate so that you don't come to me anymore. Now, a lot of people have been stepping back on their views. And as far as Richard, I don't know that he's even been stepping back. It's just, he had a network of associations back then. I don't think that he was adopting the view of everyone in the alt-right then. I don't think that Richard Spencer fundamentally agrees with Mike Enoch, but he was hanging out with Mike Enoch. He was hanging out with people engaging in various strands and branches of the right. And I believe that when he says that he that he interprets all of this as an error, he's talking about a pragmatic error. He's talking about a strategic mistake, and he's talking about in terms of guilt by association and in terms of, oh, well, I shouldn't have surrounded myself with low-quality people. That's how he sees it. That's at least my telling of it. That's my understanding of it. You know, I don't know much more about Richard Spencer than you do, because all of my interactions with him are public. So if you watch our monthly conversations, you know everything that I know. But yeah, I guess that the Richard Spencer that was speaking publicly in 2017 is the same guy that we know today. But it's a guy who may have been hanging out with people who were not like him. In a way, Richard Spencer has been declared the leader of the alt-right, but no one has ever truly gone through the process of asking, is he even like these guys who need a leader? In a way, it was very different from these guys who needed a leader. Richard Spencer is guided by his own thoughts. He's an independent intellectual, guided by ideas around art and culture and somewhat politics. But he was not like the guys that followed him. He is a different man. And so it's understandable that looking back, he sees all of this as, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't have done this. Maybe it wasn't good optics. And that's fine. I don't judge him for this. Considerations of optics ultimately don't matter to me. What matters to me is the truth of the ideas. That is what guides my public contribution. Much love, everyone. Sleep well. And I'll see you all tomorrow.